We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone. I am Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. Perpetual Chess is a weekly interview show where top chess players, authors, content creators, and accomplished amateurs discuss their careers and share stories and chess improvement tips. Perpetual Chess is a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network, and we'd like to give a special thanks to our presenting chess education sponsor, Chessable.com. For more information about the show, you can go to perpetualchesspod.com. But without further ado, let's get to the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another Tata Steel-focused bonus edition of Perpetual Chess. A lot of you may have heard last week we did a rundown of this illustrious tournament, the Wimbledon of Chess. In that pod, I was joined, as I am joined again, by FIDE Master Maikio Ablin. I'll introduce him in a second, but just wanted to say that last week we focused more on sort of the big picture, the history of Tata Steel Chess. I'm sure I'll be discussing that more in coming months, but this time we're going to focus more on the actual standings, because as we record this on Thursday, the final rest day, Thursday, January 26th, we're coming in for a landing. You know, we've got three rounds to go. It's pretty close, as we'll be diving into. But first, let's just remind you all who our guest co-host joining us from the Netherlands is. He is a FIDE master, author of the fantastic book, The Anand Files. He's also a well-reviewed Chessable author focusing on the Trompovsky and the Leningrad Dutch, and he's been covering the event for The Week in Chess, writing about it every day, as has Mark Crowther. So be sure to check that out. And without further ado, let's welcome FIDE Master Maikio Ablin back to the pod. Welcome, Maikio.
Thanks, Ben. Great to be back. And I've received great feedback on the podcast last week. So looking forward to this one.
Good. Yeah, glad to hear it. I certainly enjoyed it. As I said last week, it's sort of the next best thing to being there, but I've definitely been enjoying the chess. So we'll be running through the standings in a minute. But first, Maikio, sort of big picture, what has struck you about this tournament? What has been your overall impression, of course, with the final three chapters yet to be written?
It is a very much, I would say, non-standard tournament. And that's probably because you have such a diverse playing field with the young players, with some very creative players like Richard Rapport. And then some people of the, who have been around in the top 10 for much longer, Magnus, Fabi, Wesley So. And I think the clashes between those different kind of generations and different kind of playing styles, the way they approach chess, has resulted in a fantastic tournament so far.
Yeah, I agree. And just to quickly go through the standings, we'll be going through them in more detail in a minute. But of course, Abdusattarov, the Uzbek phenom, 18 years of age, up to number 17 in the world on the live ratings, leads. But Anish Giri is just half a point back, and they play tomorrow, and Anish has white. And then there's this young upstart Magnus Carlsen, only 1 point back, making a late charge, and Wesley So is also 1 point back. So we'll be getting more into the standings, but one thing that struck me as I looked at it, Michael, is, you know, here on the podcast, both at the amateur level and at the professional level, we've been talking about how incredibly fast all of the young players are progressing with all of the digital tools in chess, with their boundless energy. They're able to just improve at sort of what seems to me to be an unprecedented rate. And of course, we love that Tata Steel gives these younger players an opportunity. But as I looked at 2700 chess, Abdusattarov, of course, is rocketing up the live ratings. But other than that, it's the old guard. Well, and Ding Liren's having a tough tournament, but Giri is outperforming. Wesley So is outperforming. Aronian, who I felt like had been quiet this tournament, but actually has 5.5 out of 10 and is actually up rating as well. So the old guard is doing pretty well, and Gukesh and Max Sudlu and Irigesi are down some points. Although I think everyone, as we'll discuss, has something good they can take from this tournament. But anyway, it did strike me that the old guys are hanging in there this time, with the exception, of course, the young buck on top.
No, you're absolutely right. And it's great fun to have some of the old guard in the tournament. It's also great fun to talk to them afterwards, like Levon Aronian is always in for some jokes in when he comes to the press room. Like yesterday when Richard Rapport made a very quick draw, I said to Levon, is this what you expected? And his response was a bit like, well, you know, when you play Richie, you know you're going to be surprised. Mm-hmm. So I decided not to prepare, because I knew he was going to surprise me. But the surprise that actually happened, that he exchanged everything and made a quick draw, is definitely something he had never expected, because that's what Richie normally never does. So Levon was really surprised, but also quite happy with the draw.
Yeah, that's funny. And on that note, Michael, I mean, we just discussed Levon, but we might as well take it player by player, and you could share your reflections on each player in the Masters section. Now, before we do that, just so I don't forget, I do want to give a shout out to the Challenger section. As we discussed last time, of course, this is a slightly less strong tournament, average rating probably around 2600-ish, as opposed to the many 2700s in the Masters section, but it's highly contested with some entertaining games as well. Alexander Danchenko, who is a 24-year-old German grandmaster from Russia originally, is tied for first with Mustafa Yilmaz, who is a Turkish grandmaster, and another strong young Uzbek player, Yakovir Sindovar, is in third place with 6.5 out of 10. So those are the primary challengers to win those games. And of course, there's been some, you know, Aline Robers, Dutch young rising star, started strong, but she struggled a little bit here in the U.S. People are rooting, of course, for Abhi Mishra. He had at least one nice game, but also near the bottom of the standings. Pragananda's sister has 4 out of 10. She's another rising star. So a lot of interesting stuff there too. Before we get to the play-by-play of the Masters section, do you have any big takeaway from the challengers, Michael?
Yeah, well, a couple of observations. One is that it's very much an open race, and I wouldn't be surprised if the ultimate winner in that tournament will have at least lost once in the tournament. So I think it's a very tight race where anyone can win from anyone. And lots of young players there, young talents. You mentioned Mishra, who's clearly still having some development gaps, which he needs to address. But at the same time, he's playing very enterprising chess and in nearly all his games going for it. And I think that's great spirit. The other thing that I found quite remarkable, I was having a chat with Eline Rubers yesterday, and she kind of made a quick draw against Petchak, who's also having a very unfortunate tournament. I think he's on minus 35 or minus 40 rating points. It must be his worst tournament ever. And it wasn't a kind of boring, solid draw right from the start. It just happened after some complications that the position that remained was very drawers. So they were done after about 2 hours of play. And I asked Elina, okay, what are you going to do this afternoon? And she said, well, what else can I do? I'm going to play Blitz.
Good for her. That's a good attitude. Yeah, that's funny. And that's the sort of attitude that you often see amongst these rising stars, sort of an insatiable appetite for chess. So bringing it back, and as you say, it'll be interesting to see who wins. And of course, you win some cash if you win the challengers section. But kind of the big prize is, of course, that you will get to play in next year's masters section. So bringing it back to the masters section, let's take it player by player. And unfortunately, someone's got to be at the bottom of the standings. And in this case, we'll start with young German phenom Vincent Keimer, who has 3.5 out of 10, which is not, you know, it's a decent showing, actually. But what have been your impressions of his play, Mike Yu?
Well, I think Keimer is a bit unfortunate this tournament. He had some very promising positions. His opening play is maybe not at the level yet where some of the other players are. I see quite a big gap in terms of creating play with white. He often chooses offbeat systems. But that only gives his potential on how well he's playing already. And he has lost, I think, 2 positions twice in time trouble, which, of course, is a bit unfortunate. Maybe also because this is his strongest event that he's ever played. So maybe he's a little nervous. He also lost to Carlsen, a game where he was playing way below his normal level. So that was a 3 point for Magnus. And those kind of things can happen. I think the rook end games, 2 draws against Abdus Satorov and against Jordan Favores yesterday, they were very complicated rook end games. And I realized the engine shows plus 4, but even in the press room, we were looking at it with some top grandmasters. Initially, Anish looked at some of these positions. Aronian had a quick look, and they all concluded that it's not simple at all. And I was very, very much struck when I saw a tweet from a well-known chess trainer, grandmaster, who also has a chess academy, and he said something around that most mistakes that we make are basic. Also at top level. And I thought, what? That's not my observation at all. If you look at this tournament, these top GMs play very complicated games, and I definitely would not reach their level. If you give the mistakes they make to me as a puzzle, which of course is already much easier than in a game, because you know you have to do something, you have to find a good solution, I'm not sure I would be able to solve it. So for me, when I watch these type of games, it's like pieces of art being explained to me. But it's not that I will reach that level myself to draw such a painting. And it's very intriguing, fascinating to see at the high level these people play. And it's also instructive to see that with the right commentary, with the right people, mistakes are being explained, and you get to see how difficult our game is. But in general, I would say the level of play is incredibly high, also for Keimer, who then didn't manage to convert both rook end games, but they were so complicated, so difficult. And even the way both Abdussatturov and Fafouris managed to keep the draw, I thought was very impressive.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's always easier on the sidelines to criticize. And obviously, he is, he had an amazing showing in the World Rapid and Blitz, and nothing to worry about long term. But I mean, I don't really feel qualified to sort of adjudicate a debate about the quality of his end game play. It's obviously better than mine, I'm sure whether it's a glaring weakness or a relative weakness, I'm sure he'll be working on it. I don't think he has too much to worry about long term.
I fully agree. And we also need to realize that these mistakes are being made after 7 hours of play.
Exactly,
In a way, the Tata tournament is very special because, first of all, you have the length, 13 rounds, which is very rare nowadays. But on top of that, also time controls. They play with a little bit slower, so they have 1 hour 40 to start with instead of 90 minutes, and they get extra time on move 40 and I think even on move 60. So the games tend to be a lot longer than in other tournaments. And I've heard already from several players that the tournament is actually exhausting for them, despite the rest days, because I guess also on rest days they're still working hard on chess. There's a lot of tension because every opponent is so strong. And then these very long games. And I think Keimer is probably, I didn't do the statistics, but probably the person who made most moves in this tournament and also spent most hours behind the board. Some very, very long games. So despite bottom place, I think hats off for his fighting spirit and how he tries still to maximize his learning journey.
Yeah, well said. And what have your impressions been of Arjen Irigesi?
Yeah, Arjen basically has had two tournaments so far. So he had a very decent start with a strong opposition where he managed to hold draws in very complicated fights. And now he's lost 3 games in a row. And it feels like a mental breakdown. And It's one of those things where you probably see the difference between a trainer versus a coach. Arjen has as his trainer, Srinath Narayanan, who's also still a very young but fantastic trainer. But for him, these are also new situations. And how to coach a player then to get out of that mental breakdown is not something that Narayan will have a lot of experience with. And it's very difficult after 3 of such heavy losses. For example, an incredible game against Richard Rapport, to get out of it and get back. So hopefully after this rest day, Arjen will be able to make a solid draw tomorrow. And that should be the target. And then trying to get slowly back his level of confidence. But yeah, the tournament is almost over. And I think it's a bit disappointing for him personally because he was doing so well initially in the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, it's a long tournament, like you say, so it's easy for the script to flip as it goes on. And of course, you have your fellow Dutchman, young star, defending champion, Jordan van Forest.
Yeah, I think Jordan won here 2 years ago. So last year he lost the crown already in a way. But of course, when he won, it was a very big surprise for everyone. And I think in 2022, he had already mixed results throughout the year in all tournaments. And his rating dropped a little bit. And Jordan is still a player who can have fantastic days, really good days. But he's been a bit more uneven than when he won the tournament. And that's something that he hasn't been able to address. I think once he can address that and become a bit more stable, he will probably gain 50 points because he can outplay anyone at the top level, including Magnus Carlsen. They're all a little bit afraid of him. But at the same time, at this moment, Jordan makes too many oversights, too many blunders, also in this tournament. And then on certain days, he plays really well. Yesterday, he was playing a great game against Keimer, slowly pressuring him, winning a pawn. And then suddenly, in slight time trouble, he blunders and he managed to escape to this end game, which he barely just made a draw. But yeah, normally he would have scored a full point, and it's those kind of things. So for me, it's not a surprise, because I see part of a trend with Jordan that's been going on for about 12 months already, and I hope he will get out of it and gain those extra 50 points again.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's young, plenty of time to right the ship, so it will be interesting to see. And by the way, listeners, I should mention, I'm very grateful to Michael for giving these rundowns, and of course we're coming into the home stretch here with three rounds to go. I will not be doing a bonus pod covering the results, but I am tentatively scheduled to interview one of the Masters schedule participants in February. So obviously you guys can find the results a million places online and watch the event as it unfolds. But so I won't be doing an immediate reaction to the tournament, but we will be doing plenty of discussion in February and in the coming months, which brings us to the next competitor. Of course, he was a late replacement to join the tournament, Iranian Grandmaster Parham Maksudlu.
Yeah, and Parham has had also a mixed tournament. Initially, he started okay, and now he's dropping back in the last few rounds. I think what you see with him are two things. One is, and I think we discussed it already last week, because of the late invitation, he didn't have time to properly prepare. And that's a major disadvantage in such a tournament, because all the others are so well prepared. And they put so much pressure. And also with white, it's hard to play your openings to create a game if you don't have ideas ready. And I think that's one of the problems that he struggles with. He's thrown away a few games, which I think in normal circumstances he would probably not. But I also see some psychological aspects. So, for example, he lost yesterday to Magnus in a game where he could easily have made a draw around move 20. There was a very obvious line that would result in an, I would say, a highly drawish endgame. And Magnus had already accepted, basically, that the game would be a draw. And then Parham played another move, not to play for a win. Even afterwards, it wasn't clear why he didn't play the main line. It looked like he had seen it a little bit, but maybe not paid sufficient attention. But also throughout the post-mortem, and it was quite special again to see them analyzing on a board with pieces without first checking the engine. For many years in Wijk aan Zee, that was no longer the case. In the old days, players would always come afterwards and start analyzing. Then with the rise of the engines, players would always go first to their hotel and check with the engines. Nowadays, you see some of them analyzing again. And that's what Magnus was doing with Maksudlu yesterday. And it felt during the post-mortem that there was just a huge difference between level of understanding and chess capability between the two. And that doesn't feel right, considering that, I mean, yes, the rating difference might be 140 rating points, maybe 150. But it felt like Parham was feeling like a small boy looking up to someone who's way superior. And that impacts his play. I noticed that already in the World Rapid, where he lost in, I think, 21 moves or something toward to Magnus. And now again, it was a game that was way below his normal level.
Huh. So for these post-mortems, Michael, are they just doing it at the board after their game? Or are they doing it as part of a press conference? How were you able to see it?
They come to the press room.
Okay.
And that's where we have a few
boards. But they
boards
do have a set, or they're doing it blindfold? I mean, I know it's kind of the same for them.
Most of them actually do it with a set.
Okay.
There have been one or two people who were doing it blindfold, and then I tried to follow, but it's very hard to follow blindfold on which position they're actually starting from. So most of them use the chess set, and then I can stand next to them and look a bit, review a bit the lines, use them in my reports. There was a very funny moment earlier in this tournament where Magnus was analyzing, I don't remember exactly with which opponent, and some crazy position arose, and they thought it was okay. And suddenly Fashali, who's playing in the challenges, said, yeah, but here you have this, this, and this. And normally people never dare to interrupt with Magnus. It can be quite dangerous. He can be dismissive. But he immediately said, oh, yeah, that's great input. We appreciate.
That's nice.
So, that must have been, correct.
Must yeah, have been a
and it
feeling.
Was a fantastic tactic that she saw.
Wow.
So fun moment. Yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, Michael, we've got more players to dissect, but we're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. We will be right back. Perpetual Chess is brought to you in part by aimchess.com. Aimchess has an algorithm that gathers your games from the major sites like chess.com and LeeChess and gives you actionable intel based on the patterns it detects. It can be how you do with certain openings, what aspects of the game you excel at versus need work at. And guess what? Aimchess has a new feature that you should check out right now, just in time for the new year. You can check out your year in review for 2022. You just enter your username and it gives you how many hours you spent chess, how many games you played, how you did with various openings, lots of fun facts that the algorithm is able to gather. So be sure to check out aimchess.com. If you decide to try out subscribing, use the code perpetual30 to save 30%. You can also use the link in the show description to try out aimchess.com.
In 10 days, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
And we are back. And next up on the list is Grandmaster D. Gukesh, also with 4 out of 10 points.
Yeah, Gukesh, of course, started with 2-0s in this tournament. And it's clear that when you start with 2 losses, everybody's going to focus on you. Everybody sees you as a target. And then to see how he's now come back, I think he won 2 games in the later rounds. And he managed to make a draw with Black against Magnus in a very fighting game. Really struck me as impressive. Magnus, of course, puts a lot of pressure on you if he's white. And this was a Ragozin, and it was a very complicated fight. And on top of that, Gukesh was also a bit short on time. He got in time trouble. And they analyzed afterwards, and it felt like much more an analysis between equals than like the previous example with Maksudu. So very impressive how Gukesh approached that game towards Magnus, but also in general, how he managed to make the comeback in this tournament after his previous 2 losses. I think yesterday something funny happened. He played against countryman Pragnanda, and they played a very wild opening variation where Pragnanda had maybe prepared it a few moves deeper. But in the end, they were both out of book in a position that was extremely wild, full of possible sacrifices and full of tactics. And what you see here is that they just went for it. And I think Pragnanda thought about one move for about 45 minutes, which is way too long, as we all know. And it was also not the best move he made. And eventually he lost that game. But the fact that they went for this opening line without having it prepared to the umpteenth of detail shows a bit their courage and their approach to chess. Well, for example, earlier in the tournament, I think 3 days ago or so, Anish Giri won with Black against Ding Liren. And that was also a sharp opening line where at some point Ding makes a small mistake. He plays g5 and Anish can there sacrifice a piece with f takes e3. And he didn't do that. And then Anish was much worse in that game. But eventually, Ding played a couple of poor moves and Anis won. And afterwards, I asked Anis about that moment of the peace sacrifice. And Anis said something like, yeah, of course, I saw this, but I will never play this if I haven't prepared this. And he said, in effect, I should maybe not even have played this line because if I don't know all the details, then it's quite risky, as happened in the game. And this, for me, shows the difference. And I'm not saying one approach is better than the other, but the difference between approaches between Anis Giri and for example, Gukesh and Pragnanda, where the Indian youngsters are willing to take a lot of risk and say, we'll figure it out behind the board. And Anis will want to stay in control, and that's just a personal preference, and will try to avoid these kind of super complicated lines if he's not prepared for it.
That's a great insight. And following up on what you mentioned about Gukesh's game with Prague yesterday, he did show some amazing calculation. I caught some of the post-mortem interview with Fiona Steele Anthony, and yeah, he basically said, as you alluded to, the opening was a wreck. I just messed it up. But yeah, Prague went for this this sacrifice. As you mentioned, there were lots of sacrifices in the air, but he spotted this subtle clearance sacrifice five moves into the combination that basically made his whole refutation work and made Pragnanda's sacrifice not work. So it was a nice little clip covered in the chess.com recap, but that really highlighted sort of what goes on behind the scenes of when you watch one of these games, and impressive calculation, not surprisingly, by Gukesh.
Yeah, and Gukesh and Pragnanda know each other very well. They're both part of this Pro Chess Academy from India. I think you interviewed Ramesh on that, if I remember correctly, a while back. And if you look at that academy, they're extremely successful. I think in the A group, they have something like four participants. And I think Giri is one of the trainers. Kazanjanov is one of the trainers. I think even in the B group, Fashali, of course, but also Mishra is a student of that academy. It suddenly struck me the other day on how successful that academy is.
It's a good point. Yeah, Ramesh is an impressive guy. Okay.
Yeah. And Gukesh, I don't know if we discussed this last week, but his trainer, Vishnu Prasanna, has always taught him chess without using an engine.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I discussed this a little bit with Gukesh yesterday on whether he doesn't feel disadvantaged in his opening repertoire. And he says, well, we've started now working with an engine and with the databases. I had to at this level. But he also agreed with me that maybe next to Vishnu, he should also look for a second person to help him, who's more like an opening expert. And of course, we mentioned then, for example, now Anis Giri, and Gukesh immediately started laughing because Anis is known as the best opening prepared person in the world top. And even the fact that he's the best prepared player, he now teams up with one of the best opening seconds in the world, Jon Gustafsson. Mm-hmm. So they've formed a real powerhouse. So for the time being, you can expect in terms of opening novelties and how openings should be played, that Anis will stay on top for a bit longer.
Yeah, agreed. All right, next up, I guess a slightly disappointing tournament, especially with the World Championship looming in April. Ding Liren with 4.5 out of 10.
Yeah, this must be a very disappointing tournament. And I think when you're going to interview people, Ben, on that match and predictions, they should take this tournament into consideration and pay a lot of attention to it, because it's not a lot related to the openings he plays, which you could understand and explain. So you need to hide something for the match. But actually, we noticed that Ding is making a lot of mistakes in the late middle game and also in the end game. And that is, first of all, a warning sign on your overall playing level. but also at the top level, playing with confidence, being in the flow, makes a huge difference. I remember that when Caruana was playing for the match against Carlsen for the title, before that, Fabi was winning almost everything. Yeah, he was winning St. Louis, he was winning the candidates. Then I think 2 days later, he played a tournament in Germany and he won that. And you really get into that flow. Ding was a bit lucky already in Madrid in the candidates to even become second. That could also have been someone like Nakamura. There were other people who were close to becoming second. And now he's invited to play that match. And this tournament is really not going well for him. And also, outside the tournament, he's not very, very social. He typically leaves the press room immediately after the game. And one of the organizers on the previous rest day saw him walking somewhere, I would say, next to a main road where cars can go quite fast. And she stopped and wondered where was he going. And he wanted to walk all the way to the station, which is probably a two-hour walk, and then go to with the train to a museum. And it looked like he had completely lost his way, didn't know exactly which way to go. So it was good that she, in a way, rescued him. Huh. But it feels like it's not Ding's tournament. And I'm worried about the match in that sense. Because I was very impressed with Nepo's performance last year, and I'm sure he will, with his team, prepare very well again. And Ding's play here, it doesn't make a good impression.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully he can turn it around and make it a fighting match. But I share your concerns going forward. And with 5 out of 10, we have another, as you mentioned, young Indian Phenom Pragananda.
Yeah, Prague, we discussed already a bit, being trained by Ramesh, just like Vaishali, his sister. It's quite special, of course, a brother and sister in the A and B group, probably a first in Tata. Maybe we had before brother and brother with the brothers Van Voorhees, and there might be other examples. I'm not great in historical stats. But I thought this is quite special, and both being trained by Ramesh. And what you see is that Prague's tournament has been some ups and downs. Still some development gaps also in terms of calculation. Sometimes people say, oh, these youngsters, all they can do is calculate, calculate, calculate. I think that's a bit exaggerated. But it is true that their historical knowledge is quite limited. They typically don't use chess books. They get sessions from Rames or from Pro Chess Academy with all the trainers there, like Kasimjanov, Ganguly, and Giri. And one of the trainers even told me that a lot of these young players don't have an understanding of which chess player is from which era. So if they are not playing with that chess player, they think it's someone from the past, and they put all people from the past together. So, for example, Ivanchuk and Rubinstein, for them, could be from the same period, which is completely ridiculous, of course.
That's funny.
It's just very strange that this is still missing. But it also shows that if they start working on it, they can make still tremendous progress, because no doubt learning from your predecessors like Kasparov's books is an essential part of your chess development at the higher levels. So in that sense, there's still a lot of work, and that's also for Prague. But I think he has a good learning journey in this tournament. He's fighting every game. I think he still has his big game with Magnus coming up. Might be tomorrow, if I'm not 100% sure. But they're still going to play. And that's going to be a very important game for him in terms of evaluating how this tournament went.
Yeah, we shall see. Always a good testing ground to get to play Magnus, one of the greatest of all time. We should probably pick up the pace a little bit, Mike Yule. So let's take the next three players in tandem. We've got, and they've come up, at least Rapport and Aronian have come up already. Fabiano, we have not discussed. But anyway, Rapport has 5 out of 10. And then Aronian and Caruana are sharing fifth place with 5.5 out of 10. What has struck you about those players?
Well, Rapport is very clearly not in great shape this tournament. He's quite cynical about his own play, and he might be his own worst enemy. That makes it more difficult. He also lost a horrible game against Magnus, and we'll get to that when we discuss Magnus in a second. But he played one game which was absolutely so brilliant against Arjun 2 rounds ago, where he played this move Bishop e4 in a Nimzo Indian, and it was like immediately after that he regretted it, because White could go King e1, King e2, and I think even if you give it as a puzzle, almost no one would come up with that move. So it shows a very deep understanding. The engine approves of King e2. And Arjun played something else. I think he played Queen d2 or something. And then Rapport came with this g5 and g4, while his king was still on e8. Very deep concept. But again, the engine approves and shows already some advantage for Black. Arjun, like I said, has a bit of a mental breakdown in tournament, couldn't think clearly anymore after this was happening and lost very quickly. But absolute brilliant game from Rapport. And I think if in 10 years he publishes a best games collection, this game should be in there.
Yeah, as you alluded to earlier, vis-a-vis Aronian, you never know when he's going to uncork one of these classic games.
Yeah.
And what about, actually, before we get to Caruana, I had meant to ask you, when you are watching the games, during the middle of the games, is there commentary for you to listen to? How does it work at the venue?
So for me in the press room, no, there isn't. Of course, I could switch on one of the streams like chess.com or chess24, one of the others. But next to the venue, there's a pub, and there they give live commentary every day with a different grandmaster. So you can walk over there. So that's an option. But for me, actually, I need to keep track of all the 7 games and try to find critical points that I want to ask the players about when they leave. So it's hard work to keep track of all those games. First, you want to understand where they deviate in the opening, where there might be novelty till how far they're prepared. And then you also want to get an understanding of where the engine shows big deviations compared to the move they play. And my experience is that with these players, if you just give them one move, oh, the engine says here you should play move X, that's completely insufficient, because usually they have actually seen that move, but maybe not seen the entire line that the engine gives. And usually it's not just a single line, but there are multiple lines. So I need to prepare that a little bit for myself, try to memorize it, be able to do it from heart. And then I can ask the players when they get out of the playing room. But it's hard work just to be prepared for the 2 or 3 minutes that you have them before they go to the hotel.
Okay, yeah. Well, that makes sense. And it's good that you take this opportunity so seriously and follow everything so closely. So let's bring it back to Fabi. I mean, of course... His losing to Magnus, that was fascinating, both sort of from a psychological and from a chess perspective. But what's been your overall impression of Fabiano there?
I feel like Fabiano has lost a bit of his playing strength since he lost that match against Magnus. And he's still an incredibly strong player. But around that match, I remember he was over 2,800, I think, and winning a lot of tournaments. And since then, it's not so automatic anymore that he wins these super tournaments, whether it's the US Championships or other tournaments. Of course, competition has gotten stronger, but also it feels like Fabi sometimes overpresses a little bit. And sometimes also he misses one or two chances that in the past he would maybe not have missed. He's still an incredible calculator. That's probably one of his biggest strengths. But also you see that he's still a little bit damaged from the match against Magnus. So again, this tournament, he lost to Magnus almost like a child. He was maybe still exhausted from the seven-hour game he had the day before, where he didn't convert against this rook endgame. Against was that against Abdus Satorov? No, against Maksulu. He had a very long game, the queen endgame, which he could have won. And he missed that, and he probably checked with the engine and then was very frustrated. And then the next day against Magnus, he lost in basically 20 moves. It was almost game over already. Very poor game from Fabi. So I still don't see the old strong Fabi back. But even if it's not at that level, it's maybe only 2, 3% below, so 97% of his all-time high, which is still incredibly strong. And that's what you see in this tournament. He can win from anyone. A lot of creative ideas, and he tries to go for a fight where possible. Of course, at this level, if White wants a draw, White basically can always make a draw. Yeah, apart from psychological factors that you don't play at your normal level, but you can choose the opening lines, you can simplify the position, you can avoid risk, and then it's very hard for Black to create anything. But luckily at the moment, not a lot of people do that against Fabi. So I would say any round, it's very interesting to follow his games.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, the Carlsen game in particular, I mean, it was just a normal position and then just like one misstep and Magnus's pieces just exploded. Definitely one of the many games worth reviewing. And as you say, I mean, Fabiano has not been in peak form lately, but still number 7 in the live rating. 30 years of age. So I'm hoping that he makes one more push to the top because, I mean, obviously I've been a fan of his for a long time, but particularly as he opens up more on the C-Squared podcast, even bigger fan now. It's so nice to get that sort of unfiltered perspective from Fabiano. And of course, tied for third, we have two of the veterans of the chess world, Wesley So and Magnus Carlsen. I'm sure we'll get to Magnus, but any remarks about solid Wesley So, Mikeyo?
I think you summarized it correctly, Ben. Solid. That's the key word.
He's like Wesley. A metronome. I mean, some of his games, of course, can be very exciting, but results-wise, opening-wise, I feel like there's a bit more of a rhythm than some of the other top players.
Agree. He has missed, I think, at least in two games where he could have converted, and then he would have been maybe shared first at the moment. Then everything needs to go well. So he missed those chances. I feel that Wesley is missing a little bit in his opening preparation. If he would have someone to help him for even some more creative ideas to upset his opponents or to derail his opponents a bit, then he would be even stronger. Because Wesley is an incredibly strong player. Lots of good calculations, great insights on say, the correct way of playing. He has a great feeling for that. But now at the moment, what you see is that with his openings, he sometimes struggles to create a game. And if he doesn't get a game, then he doesn't lose. He easily makes the draw. But that's sometimes what happens, and then it can be a bit boring.
Yeah, well said. And he is now rated 2766, up 6.7 points, and number 8 in the world, 0.2 of a point behind Caruana. And of course, all this data is courtesy of the invaluable 2700chess.com, where number 1. Down 6.8 points despite being in third place. That quest for 2,900 is quite challenging, as he has alluded to, but making some noise in recent rounds, including a win against Maksudlu, as Mikael Aplin, our guest, alluded to earlier, is Magnus Carlsen. So anything to add about Magnus? Of course, he's come up throughout the course of our conversation.
Yeah, I think, first of all, I'm convinced Magnus will reach that 2,900.
Wow.
Because there is such a thing as rating inflation. what you see is that over time, slowly the ratings of the top people are going up. So the average rating in the tournaments will also go up. And Magnus is still such an incredibly strong player that I have no doubt that eventually he will get there. It will take maybe another 2 years or so. But yes, I can see that happening. This tournament, Magnus was beaten twice in the early rounds by Giri and Abdu Satorov. Also, he took quite a lot of risk. In the later rounds, he's been lucky in the sense that he didn't need to take a lot of risk to still convert to a full point. And what you see is that a lot of people are playing way below their level. And I call this a psychological impact from playing against the great big Magnus. And people really seem to be struggling in this tournament with that. So we've seen Rapport, we've seen Fabi, we've seen Maxulu. They all gave away their games without too much effort. And for Magnus, in a tournament where things are not going well, he was clearly not playing very precise in the early rounds. That's, of course, fantastic news. And I did some calculations. I looked a little bit at the opponents they still have to play. And I can see as a very realistic scenario that Magnus and Giri and Abdu Satorov will end this tournament on 8.5 points. So three people on shared first. Of course, there are many other scenarios possible. But I wouldn't rule out that Magnus is still going to share for the title and may even win in a blitz playoff.
Yeah, I caught his interview with Fiona Steele Anthony, and Fiona's doing a great job as always. Shout out to Fiona. But yeah, there was definitely a bit of a spring in his step that was not detected earlier in the tournament. And yeah, he's not to be discounted, but he also conceded himself in the interview that it's kind of out of his hands. I mean, he's going to need some help. Being a point back with three rounds to go, I guess he'd be rooting for Giri with white against Abdu Satorov on Friday, and then hoping to then only be half a point back if he can win as well. Although I guess if he can win even a draw, and he'd be half a point back. But in any event, he's going to need some help. And Mikey, I have to say, I respectfully disagree about him hitting 2,900. To me, to gain 50 more points at age 32 with all these young upstarts, I mean, it's generally not been a profitable business to bet against Magnus Carlsen, but that would be quite a feat for him to pull that off.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we've got second place, the Dutchman, of course, with Russian and Indian roots as well. Chess star, Twitter star, 28 years of age, up 12.8 points, so up to number 5 on the live ratings. Anish Giri, what have you noticed, Michael?
Well, Anish usually plays well in Wijkenzee, not fantastic. Yes, he was shared first, I think, twice. But he also had some tournaments that were not so great. But never, I don't remember a very bad tournament, maybe in the earlier years. This tournament is, of course, very special for him and all his support and sponsors. And I think he prepares well for it. He usually feels at home in Wijkenzee. And you can also tell afterwards in the press room, he's making all kind of jokes. He's analyzing with other players, not just in the Masters, but also in the Challengers. With people like Adiban or with Lamy. He's following their games with great interest. Yesterday, he had followed the game of Donchenko. So, Max Warmerdam, of course, he follows because Max used to work for him. So Anish is really enjoying this tournament. He's playing well, lots of good opening ideas. I think you can see already the initial benefit of working with Gustafsson, which started a few months ago. And the idea is to continue that going forward. And I think that's working well for Anish. Anish was, of course, had dropped out of the top 10 and then suddenly doesn't get invites for tournaments anymore. So he had to change something. And what you see is that he made this very deliberate decision to work with Jan and focusing now on Tata. And yeah, like you said, maybe number 5, he will get tournament invites again. And he can continue in the top of the chess world. So I think great achievement for Anis. He was a little bit lucky in his game against Ding. He could have lost that game easily. But that's basically the only game so far where he's really been at risk. And yeah, he calculates well. He's very well prepared. And we'll see. He's not for me immediately favored to win against Abdus Satorov. But it really depends on how Abdus Satorov will come out of the rest day.
And we will be back momentarily to wrap things up and discuss the incredible performance so far of Grandmaster Abdus Satorov. Perpetual Chess is proud, as always, to be brought to you in part by Chessable.com. Chessable, of course, is known for their Move Trainer technology, which utilizes spaced repetition to help you remember tactical patterns and opening sequences. They have a huge library of courses for whatever aspect of your game you want to work on. Some of their new courses include a course on the Tirage Defense to D4, which is a good choice if you're looking for a dynamic opening against 1D4. It's by Super Grandmaster Jordan Von Forrest. Speaking of Super Grandmasters, former world champion and legendary trainer Rustam Kazymjanov has a course out on the C3 Sicilian. If you're newer to chess, be sure to check out friend of the pod, I am Andres Toth's 1D4 for beginners. And of course, they've got tactics courses too. They have stuff you can check out for free. So if you have not already, make sure you go to chessable.com and keep an eye on their ever-growing supply of quality chess courses.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
And we are back. And obviously, you mentioned Geary's legendary opening preparation. It'll be interesting to see what he targets in the youngster's repertoire. Regarding Jan Gustafsson working with them, of course, Jan did mention it on the Chicken Chess Club podcast. But did you hear them provide more details? As you mentioned that they've been working together for months and plan to continue to do so.
No, my understanding is, but this is more my understanding that I've heard through the grapevine, not officially confirmed, is that for Anis, it's a big target to stay within the top 10. Yeah, 12th place is almost like semi-retirement at the moment. And he's too young and probably also too talented to accept that at this point. So he had to change something. Anis is well known that he tends to miss things in the middle game and end game in his sometimes in calculation. He's very intuitive player. So there has been some criticism also in the Netherlands, which was not always fair because he's one of our biggest sports stars. But we have sometimes a tendency to be a bit negative on his missed chances, which is easy nowadays to point out with an engine next to you. But it's clear that there are some, I would say, relative gaps if you benchmark him towards other top players in his calculation and in sometimes converting a better position. And as a result, he also doesn't always take a risk to keep a game going and just sees is a bit afraid, sees maybe some ghost, and then settles for a draw. And I think he realizes that he needs to do something about that, which is not easy. But I think one of the ways to potentially do something about that is by him spending less time on opening preparation, which will be a very difficult change for him because he's been doing it for so many years successfully. So it's his comfort zone. It's what he loves. And I'm not saying that he will succeed this. But I believe, but this is my own interpretation, that by partnering with Jan, his idea is that potentially he can spend a little bit less time on openings and start working on some other things. Now, whether that's going to work in practice or whether practice is that he continues to work as hard on his openings as always, and he has Jan on top of that, that's to be seen. But I think that's the strategic concept that's behind the partnership, so that Anis potentially can work a bit more on other areas in chess. And at least this tournament so far, it's very successful for him. And I would, of course, if he doesn't become a one, if he doesn't win this tournament, he will be a little bit disappointed. But I think for him, it's very important if he would become number five or number six in the world again for his tournament invites later this year.
Okay. It's so fascinating to me because to me, he's like, I mean, I've certainly heard the criticism about the propensity to draw and about calculation being a relative weakness, especially compared to his legendary opening knowledge. But to me, he's just such a fantastic chess player. It's crazy that that chess fans are sitting around criticizing him and that he might feel some pressure, because to me, it's absurd. But I get it. I mean, you know, we all want to pontificate from home. But anyway, I mean, obviously, I would like to see him make a push even higher. But I say, Anish, you're doing just fine. Don't let the haters get you down.
Well, that and I'm always impressed with all the pressures on him, how he truly behaves as a gentleman. Yeah, mm-hmm. He has that criticism. He has a lot of hate, which I think is completely unjustified. He plays some fantastic games. He's always willing to talk to the press. Great interviews with Fiona. Also, not just dry answers, but really trying to have some fun. Pays a lot of attention to his social media. Wants to interact with his fans. So in that sense, I think he's a true role model.
Well said. Okay, and number one, the very definition of burying the lead. 55 minutes in, we finally discuss the number one player in the tournament, Abdusatarov. What would you say about him, Michael?
Well, first of all, I'm very happy for him. Fantastic tournament so far. I think he has this great feature that he's not afraid of anyone. So he's really open-minded, willing to fight. He won a fantastic game against Magnus. I think that was after we recorded our previous podcast. That was in the Ajax Stadium, which was a fantastic venue. And he won this great game. And yeah, he's now on first place. But what you also see is that he played a very bad game against Keimer. And I had a smile when during the interview with Fiona, he said after that game, "I'm embarrassed about how I played today." I think this is very special words if you say that about your own play. But it was also a very long game. And then I thought it was a very professional decision, not great for the fans, to take an extra rest day yesterday by making a quick draw. Is the right thing to do. But because it's such a long tournament, you can see that people sometimes play two or even three tournaments within a tournament. And we've discussed already a few people who started well and then are now dropping back, like Maxulu and Arjun. We've also discussed a few people who didn't start well and are now making a comeback. Magnus, of course, Gukesh to a lesser extent. And the question is for Abdusatarov, and that we will see in the next three rounds, whether he will be the one to be able to play just one tournament. So whether he will be able to continue successfully. And I would define successfully as at least 50% out of the three remaining games, or preferably even one win and two draws. That would be a fantastic result for him. But it's a big challenge. And I'm also a little bit worried that in the chess world, we start overrating him after this tournament. He's a very young person, 18 years old. When you look at his results last year, some were great, but some were also not so great. Like in Biel, he lost some rating against 2,600 players. And I think we should be a bit cautious in now claiming that he will be the next world champion, successor to Magnus, etc. What you actually see in this tournament is that we have five or six young players. And I think some of them do well in this tournament and some others will do well in the next tournament. And it will take a while before they make the next step to 2750. Then it will take another maybe 1 or 2 years before they go from 2750 to 2800. Every time you need to put in a tremendous investment in terms of training to increase your level by 2 or 3%. And we've seen this always in chess history, when you look at previous world champions. Magnus was coming from a long distance. We could see already that he was going places. But also for him, it was hard work to make that extra step. And I think we need to be patient a little bit with the young people, and also not write off some of the young people who are now maybe a little bit lower, like Keimer. I'm sure he has a great future. Arjen, we will see coming back in top tournaments. And maybe Nordibek's next tournament will be not so great. It's quite possible. But this tournament, very impressive, very stable play, and I hope he will continue.
Yeah, well said. And as you alluded to, I mean, first of all, in addition to having Black against Geary in the next round, after that he has Black against Wesley So. So certainly won't be easy. And then he does have White against Van Forest in the final round. And getting to what you were saying about sort of this tendency to anoint players based on whichever tournament they have, whoever just had the top tournament. As amazing as all of these young players are, I mean, Magnus himself, when he was age 18, was like number 6 in the world and within 25 points of being world number 1. So no one is quite on his trajectory, with, you know, the possible exception of Faruja, who of course is missing in action. So, I mean, we've got all these amazing phenoms, and I'm not taking away anything from any of them, but it's not fait accompli that necessarily any of them will supplant Magnus, getting to what you were saying about him maybe tackling 2900. We shall see. It'll be interesting. Mike Yeo, this has been fantastic. It'll be a fascinating final three rounds. Do you have any plans to get ready before you head back to the tournament hall tomorrow?
No, it will be great to be there for the three rounds. I think I share a bit the passion that I said earlier, Elina Rubas, who's using her rest day today also to play Blitz. I also feel this tournament is addictive. I wish it would continue the rest of the year, probably. Very bad for my social life. Right. I really don't want it to end on Sunday. I have no idea yet what I'm going to do on Monday. Probably play Blitz or something, yeah, just to stay connected to the chess world. But it's been a truly inspirational tournament. I think we have a lack at classical tournaments at the moment. Not a lot of them happening. And if they do happen, it tends to be with, say, 5 or 6 players out of the top 10 in the world and a lot of short draws. I think this tournament has been so much open and fighting chess. You also alluded earlier to the challenges. I follow them closely. Some fantastic games, including a rook endgame that my friend Lamy won against Donchenko with a fantastic maneuver that Donchenko missed. And again, there might be people saying, oh, what an easy mistake. I don't think it was so easy at all. Once the tournament's over, I'll probably take a bit of time to go over the games, maybe analyze. I've even been thinking about putting a training session together on endgame lessons from the tournament. I can think already of about 6-7 examples. There was also a pawn endgame yesterday in the challenges with Tabatei and Beertse. So a lot of interesting stuff that basically gives you energy to continue after this tournament. And that's why I love it so much.
Well, the love comes across. And yeah, definitely appreciate your taking the time, Mike Yeo, and sharing your insights about this excellent tournament. So anything to add before we say our goodbye?
The only thing, as usual, Ben, is that I love engagement with chess enthusiasts around the world. So please reach out to me on Twitter if people have questions about this tournament, about training tips, about which chess book they should buy next. Just ask me on Twitter. I love that engagement.
Okay, glad to hear it. Well, thanks so much, Mike Yeo, and enjoy the home stretch of Tata Steel 2023.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks to everyone who helps make Perpetual Chess possible. Big shout out to my producer, Matthew Passy. I'd also like to thank the Blue Wire Podcast Network, with whom we are proud to be affiliated. Be sure to follow us on social media, Beneficial1 on Twitter, at Perpetual Chess on Instagram, and or you can join the Perpetual Chess Facebook group. You can email me, ben@perpetualchesspod.com. And of course, last but not least, I'd like to give major thanks to the Perpetual Chess Patreon and PayPal supporters. Those who choose to join that community based on their level of support can do things like submit questions for guests of the show, have access to live Zoom Q&A lectures with grandmasters who often have appeared on the show, going over chess games, answering questions, stuff like that. And you can even get access to ad-free Perpetual Chess if that's your preference. So, but most of all, thanks to everyone for listening, and we will catch you all on the...
Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.